She Did It Her Way podcast, episode 124, Building Your Story with Abby Finkenauer, the third youngest woman in state legislature.
Welcome to the She Did It Her Way podcast, a collective of interviews with top female entrepreneurs from around the globe who have done it their way. These women are disruptors, savvy, courageous, confident, innovative, decisive, unconventional, and humble. Our ladies have proven business models, have taken risks, and have failed only for success to follow. Join us as they share their stories, behaviors, habits, mindset, thought processes, and what it is like to be a woman who means business. And now, here's your host, Amanda Bolin.
I know. Well, it's so nice to find it. Like, okay, I started the recording, so you guys are hearing this, but we are chatting. I guess I'm chatting, but we are chatting because you guys are listening with Abby Finkenauer, who I actually went to high school with back at Hempstead in the great old state of Iowa. So what was your, you graduated 2007, right? Yeah, because I was.
Well, graduated like early. So the winter of 06, but yeah, right around then. Jeez. Yeah.
Go get her. That's right. Oh, so it's so nice to be chatting with you, but I thought it would be cool to bring Abby on because I've been following her on social media and all the wonderful things that she's been doing. She actually is for the second year running, which we talked about before we press record. She is the youngest current House representative and youngest Democrat.
Yeah, youngest woman. Yeah,
yeah,
there's
woman.
A, there's there another go. Younger Republican man. By I think he's a year younger than I am.
Right.
And I'm 27. I'll be 28 though in about 3 weeks.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. Yeah. But youngest Democrat and youngest woman for the second year in a row. And I just again, like, I feel like you've done so many amazing things, and especially coming off of a crazy election year in 2016. I just wanted to bring you on and ask you questions to get your insight about like shifting mindset and policy change and what is the day in the life of a representative. And also, if anyone's interested in getting into policy or how can you influence the surrounding area in terms of civic, like in the city that you guys live in, including like myself too. So yeah. Abby, thank you for coming. I'll let you like give your spiel because you're going to do it way better than what I just did.
No, I'm super happy to talk to you too and really excited. So I'm a state representative and I make laws, or I fight against some laws too. Mostly that's really what I do right now. I was elected in 2014 and had a really interesting primary to get elected against three older gentlemen. No, they're not that old. They were like 40s and 50s. But I was 24 at the time. So it was a very interesting election. And, you know, I had really great primary opponents, which I think is something that at first a lot of candidates, I'm sure, would not want to have really great primary opponents because that's scary. But I really look back on it and I'm thankful for that because it made me a better candidate as well. And someone, you know, I had to think about issues differently than I might have had before. And being 24 at the time, you had to really grow a lot in that campaign. And so that's I ended up winning that election. And yeah, I have just won my second reelect or my first reelection this past year.
Yay, so, yeah. Congrats. And the people that you were running against were incumbents too, weren't they?
No. So my first election in 14 was an open seat because back in 07, I was speaker's page in the Iowa House for Representative Pat Murphy. And then he ran for Congress and this was his open house seat. So in the area that I live in is more of a blue area. So a lot of times it's kind of the primary is really your race. So it was a primary. So myself against other Democrats then.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah. Give us an insight of like a typical day of what it is that you do.
Well, it depends on the time of year. And even then, there's really no typical day, which I actually really appreciate. So during session, which we are in a legislative session in Iowa about January through end of May-ish, or I'm beginning of May, depending on the year. some years we're in there for 100 days. We sometimes go over. Some years it's 110 days and sometimes go over. So during that time, I'm in Des Moines, so about 3 hours away from my home in Dubuque, Monday through Thursday. And so that's when we are what we call in session. So at the beginning of session, those first couple of months, it's really a lot of policy work. So we're in committees a lot. And to, you know, debate anything on the floor, they have to move through committees. So that's where a lot of our time is spent. And I'm on five different committees. So you do that. And then in the midst of those, that day, when you're in session, you have constituents coming to visit, which is my absolute favorite thing, because it's why we're called representative. So you represent the people in your district. So if my district and the people do not reach out to me and I don't hear from them, and when I reach out to them and don't hear from them, then I can't truly represent them well. So when they come down to the Capitol, that is a treat. I mean, wow. That's why I do this. So that's really exciting, and kind of breaks up the day a little bit. And then you also meet with other policymakers and different interest groups. So you have, I mean, and it's so funny because interest groups can sometimes just be taken as a really terrible thing. People are like, oh, interest groups are really terrible. Well, okay, you also have the American Cancer Society. You also have people fighting for education funding. You also have people fighting to, you know, like, for example, Narcan was a thing to make sure that people weren't dying unnecessarily of heroin overdoses if we could stop that, which we did, ended up passing something like that too. I mean, you have all these really good things that people come and talk to you about, and it's not all the shady, scary stuff that you sometimes see on, you know, Scandal or something. So yeah, so you have those people that you talk to, and the days are just, yeah, very different. And then when you're not in session, you're back in your constituents groups or your constituency, so Dubuque. But then I also travel once in a while to go to different events around even the country, where there's a lot of women's groups that are bipartisan, so Republican and Democratic women that come together and talk about policies that we all care about. So, for example, fighting human trafficking. That's not a Democrat or Republican issue, or it shouldn't be. And so we talk about that stuff and get inspiration to work across the aisle. And so that kind of, you know, breaks up non-session time as well. And then the rest of it is really meeting with your constituents, answering emails, and having meetings. And yeah, it's fun, but it's there's definitely not a typical day. Like, I could not write you out my schedule and be like, that's what I do every day. So
what did you do today?
So I'm in DC right now because it's one of those things where, so we had a national conference for state legislators after the election. So we're here getting, up to date on what, you know, the next really 100 days looks like and all that. So I've been here for that. And then this morning had meetings and, just got some lunch, and now I'm on the phone with you doing the podcast.
Yeah.
And then tonight there's a reception. Yeah.
I totally want to ask you to tell us what the next 100 days look like.
A little depressing, you know, depending on what side of the aisle you're on. I mean, there's hope, and, you know, for me, it's a lot of gearing up and being ready to fight against some stuff that we're really, you know, not wanting to see in terms of what could happen to our environment, education. There's just a lot of range of issues that we're just getting ready for, and getting all the information, and you know, not just that, not just fighting against things, but also being able to tell the story of what we want to fight for as well. So yeah, that's kind of what we've been doing.
Yeah. So will you walk us through the process? I mean, side note, I wish there was like a continuing education post-college for like U.S. history, politics. I mean, I know we learned this stuff in high school, but we're so young. And then now I feel like as you get older, you become more curious about your history and how the process and everything works. So you'll be in Des Moines January through the end of May, and then you'll travel to like DC here and there, but then talk to us about how federal like policy will impact what you're doing at the state level.
Yeah. So, they like really education. Do work in, yes, they really do work in tandem. So right now, Okay, so in federal government, we have a Republican-controlled Congress. So the House and Senate are Republican-controlled. And then we currently have a Democratic president. So, and we've had that, well, that make up for the last couple of years since we lost the Senate in 14. So what that looks like in terms of what the Democratic president has been able to do, he has made policies, I mean, in labor department, stuff like that, that affect families and overtime, that type of stuff. So he kind of did it that way instead of going through necessarily the legislative channels, because there was a lot of gridlock and roadblock. And and then in terms of education policy, that's a whole nother beast of what we're going to, I mean, that we get so much funding from the federal government in terms of education. And I mean, that's the reason we have a Department of Education, and it's used, you know, for free and reduced lunches, for example, is one thing that the federal government helps us with. And I don't know if everybody's familiar with that, but that is literally helping feed kids, because there are children who are not getting food at home. So that is where the federal government helps with the free and reduced lunches, all of that type of stuff. And that does absolutely affect us on the state level, because if that were to go away, I mean, if you can't feed the children in your classroom, I mean, there's studies after studies that if a child is not fed or they're malnourished, they aren't going to learn. So they can't learn because they are focused. I mean, you can't blame them. I mean, imagine when you've gone out with, you know, you've not had lunch for 2 hours past when you're normally supposed to have lunch. You're, you know, I'm going crazy. But
angry.
These are children. Yeah. And these are children who will sometimes be at school and if not, I mean, the last time they ate was at lunch that previous day.
Oh, my gosh.
So this is a thing that, you know, sometimes we get in a bubble and we don't realize that that is occurring. So on, you know, federal policy, that is something that does address that. However, given the new administration, I don't know where that goes. And then that also then impacts, you know, all states and what they do with their education funding as well. So it's all kind of tied into each other. It's a different thing, though. I know so many people, there's actually a lot of people who don't even understand that there is a state government, that there is House and Senate in, you know, your own state, or in, you know, different states are, you know, have different things, but that you have your own government. And so many of those policies actually do impact your lives even more so than federal policy. So they all work together, and it's going to be an interesting few years from my perspective. So, yeah.
My question then is, what's an example of a policy that you've seen impact people more from the state level than necessarily federal level?
Oh, I mean, there's a lot. So, for example, your road funding. I mean, that's something in Iowa we just had to address because our roads and bridges were literally falling apart. So we had to address, how do we deal with that? That comes through state funding. Our actual education funding, most of it does come through state as well. So we, it's depending on what percentage we give for, we call it, it used to be called allowable growth. It's not called that anymore. State supplemental aid is what we call it, but it's what we give to schools to continue to grow or keep where they're at, because inflation happens. So they need to be able to pay their teachers. They need to be able to afford textbooks, all that stuff that comes from the state. So if we are not funding our schools, I mean, they can't buy new textbooks. Like I said, they can't, they have to lay off teachers. So class sizes grow, and that becomes a problem. So that's one huge, and also mental health funding. I mean, in Iowa, for example, we have the fewest mental health beds or in the entire country. So available spaces for people who are dealing with mental health issues. So that's big issue and a big problem. So a lot of those funding things you do actually see and can feel on a daily basis, but are actually done, yeah, through the state.
What committees do you sit on then?
Currently, I sit on Ways and Means, Economic Growth, Labor, Transportation, and Economic Development Appropriations Subcommittee. However, those are all they won't all change, but there'll be some movement in the next session. So every 2 years you kind of look at your committees and you those change them. A little bit. Yeah.
Do you get to choose your committees, or are you more so assigned?
You do to an extent. You get to really say what you'd like and what you're interested in, and then your leader, so our minority leader, then ends up assigning the committees then.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, what do you find to be the easiest part of what you do and the most difficult / frustrating?
The easiest part is building relationships. I really like building relationships with my constituents, with other groups, with people who are, you know, making policy or interested in policy, and my constituents that have issues that they want to talk about. I think that part is easy because I genuinely really like people. I have a real curiosity about why someone feels the way they feel, or if you're struggling, why are you struggling? Or if that went bad for you, or you're in trouble now, okay, how did you get there? What did we do wrong to get there? So I really like kind of getting to the bottom of that and building that relationship. And the only way you figure, you know, a lot of these questions out are having real conversations. And, you know, I'm all about reading stats and research and all of that, but I think there's something to be said about actually living it and talking to people who are going through it versus just seeing stuff on paper. So that part's the easiest. I love that. That is, yeah. And it helps give me energy as well. So I think that's really easy. The hardest part is probably when you can't do something that you really feel in your heart that needs to be done to help people, and you see the effects of what it has when you can't get it done because, you know, there's partisanship. It's politics. Of course there's partisanship. Of course there are, I mean.
Give us an example if you can.
Yeah. So, for example, one thing I worked on that I thought was going to be really bipartisan and actually started out really bipartisan was it was adoptive family leave. So it basically just meant if you offer paid leave to a parent or to people who have a birth or give birth gestationally and that is their child and they qualify for leave, if you have an employee who ends up becoming a parent through adoption, they also should qualify for that same leave because you have to bond with your child. You have to, you know, be a part of your child's life. I mean, that's a huge transition for everyone. I mean, you should be able to have that same leave at the same time. Mm-hmm. And it was a kind of family values issue. And we had a Republican in the House and a Democrat in the Senate, both of which had control of the party, so should have been able to move. And yet we found pushback from a business lobby. And that was really, really frustrating for me because they looked at it as a mandate, and I understand there, you know, there are a lot of rules and regulations on businesses, and that is tough, especially if you're a small business. I completely understand that is really tough. And then you have the government coming in saying, well, you should do it this way or that way. I get that. I really do. However, when it comes down to family values issues like this, when you're just talking about equality and treating people the same and saying, you know, they deserve that same right as you do, just like I think women should get paid the same as men for the same work. I don't think that should be a partisan thing. To get that much pushback was really, really tough. And I had talked to families who were dealing with it. I had talked to families who have gone through where, you know, the one person had to quit their job after they adopted a baby because they had no time off. And how are they going to deal with that? How are they going to bond with this baby that they ended up adopting, you know, in a different country and had to adopt, you know, had to adapt to so much, or have adopted a child that has special needs from, you know, foster. And now they are their child, but they have to, you know, there's a lot you have to go through when you have a new child and it's older. And so you still need that time. And those stories were heartbreaking, and to not be able to help them and to go through and have hope and then to see that slip away was, that was tough. That was, yeah, those moments are the worst when you know, you're on the right side of it. And sometimes, you know, I can have feelings and then realize later, oh man, maybe that really wasn't the right thing. Or, you know what? I see where they're coming from. But when you you really know in your heart you're on the right side of it and you still can't do it, that's just rough. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, have you changed, have any of your, like, values since you started back in when you were 24, your views or beliefs, have any of those changed since you started?
I would say more so there's been more added to it. I think I still have all the core beliefs I came in with. There's just other things I care about now that I didn't know I was going to care about before. That's just the nature of being elected and in meeting different groups of people who, like I said, have gone through things that maybe I haven't gone through personally, but now I know their story. And so when you're running for the first time, you have your story. You know where you came from, you know why you're doing it, all that stuff, which I had. And I knew what I was going to fight for. And but yeah, when then you hear other people's stories and that becomes part of your narrative, and there are just certain things you can't unhear, mm-hmm. and certain things that then become a part of who you are and what you're fighting for. And so, like, for example, I heard some really very, very hard to hear stories about human trafficking in Iowa and little children. And I remember standing there hearing these stories and having visuals of what this looked like, and knowing that, okay, this is part of why this is called public service, because now I can't unhear that and I don't want to unhear that, and now I have to do something about that. And that's what you do. I mean, that is these stories become part of who you are too. So yeah.
Dang. I mean, even being an Iowa native, like, you would just never think something like that would take place in your backyard. But that also might be my naiveness too, right?
Yeah, I think, I mean, you know it's out there, and then to hear Iowa also has a really high percentage of it, and it's around, you know, the Des Moines area, and you're making lists, and our state is on lists that we don't want to be on. And that's really scary. And yeah, but I think that's the thing, though. We need to hear these stories, because if I didn't hear that story,
then you would never know.
I still obviously would care about human trafficking and know that it's terrible, but I wouldn't know how much it actually impacted my state directly. And you know, there's a different passion than to fight for it.
Mm-hmm. What have you noticed about being a young female in a very fast-paced environment, like politics, or what's your experience?
Yeah, so it's interesting. You sometimes wonder, and I get asked this a lot, like, do you think, you know, has your age been a hindrance? Has you being a woman being a hindrance? Has it been a combination? Like, what's that like? And I don't know this as anything but what I am, you know. Right. I don't know what it's like to do this as someone else or someone older yet, so I don't know what that is yet. And I do know I had worked around it. So I worked in the Iowa House for a couple of years before I ran. I was a legislative assistant, so I already knew a lot of the people. And so there wasn't a ton of having to gain their respect thing that I think a lot of people think would come with that part, just on my end, because they already knew me and knew what work I would do and, like, who I was. And so that I think helped me in the long run, just because since I have been younger, I've been around this because it's something I cared about. So, you know, that has been helpful, but it's tough, because there is still serious sexism in this country, and there's serious sexism in Iowa. I mean, there have been things that I've heard that, you know, I once got asked by a representative when they saw the number of co-sponsors I had on this bill. I had a bill that had 11 Republican and 11 Democratic co-sponsors on it. And this person said something like, oh, well, I see the demographics of your co-sponsor, your Republican co-sponsors. Well, you do have a certain charm about you. And I thought, well, oh my gosh. Okay. No. First of all, you only have 6 women in your caucus. So
yeah,
the amount I could pick from was very slim. And second, what you're insinuating is not why I got those co-sponsors. It was because I explained the bill well and because it's a good bill. And, right. You know, that part was, that happened within my first month of first session. So you deal with that stuff and you go, you know, how is this 2015, 2016? And, you fight against it. And I've talked about it, and the way that I'm probably fight against it the most is making sure you help the next one up too. And I talk to young women about it because they see it. I mean, whether you're Republican or Democrat, you see it. And it still does exist. To say that it doesn't is ignorant. Of course it does. So to show young women what it's like to actually be in this and that there is a place and space for you, I think is a way I've sort of dealt with it too. So, yeah.
What's your strategy? Or it doesn't even need to be, it's not a strategy, but like, how do you keep peace through the midst of what it is that you do?
In all aspects, I mean, that's, yeah. It's not just sexism you deal with. And trust me, I don't deal with that all the time either. There's just other, like I said, the disappointments of not being able to get something done that you really care about. I mean, that part's hard. And how do you keep balance with that and
like,
keep going?
Peace within yourself.
Yeah. I think it's really important to step back. And I don't think I did that really well during my first campaign because it was tough. I mean, it's so personal, and they always say, don't try to take it personal, but hello, it's you, it's your name. It's the biggest risk ever that you're taking. And,
right.
You're fighting for stuff you believe in. Of course that's personal. And in the state house too, that's personal. You know, like I said, you take on other people's stories too, and what they care about, and to not be able to do some of that stuff, it feels personal. So you have to be able to remove yourself and step back. And my peace comes from being able to do that. I mean, I have a really tight family, a big family, and a lot of them aren't really all that involved in politics at all, or really my mom cares a lot more about politics now though. So like, it's hard for me cause she loves it. I mean, oh my gosh, she watches, she gets sometimes more heated than I do. So sometimes it's not necessarily talking to mom anymore, but she gets it just as fired as I do. But it's, you know, hanging out with my cousins who just don't care about, you know, I mean, they care, but it's not their life. And so I can talk to them about stuff and disconnect and, find peace in that. And in, just a world outside of it as well. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. So I have a few more questions. What do you recommend if someone wants to get involved with policy change or like influence or just, I mean, like from a civic standpoint in their city, what are some easy ways that people can do that?
Well, I think the first thing is to realize what is it you actually want to do. I know we talked about this or messaged back and forth about this a little bit. So it depends on what you want to do. I mean, a lot of times people say, oh, I want to be involved in politics. But I mean, do you really, or do you want to be, you know, an advocate for something, like, because that's something else? Or do you want to do, or what is it that you actually care about? Figure out what it is you care about, and then go be around it. And it's easy to actually, especially when you're young, I got to be honest with you, as much as that can be a hindrance, it can also be a help, because people do want to engage and help young people in this. So they want to really help out that next generation and get them excited about it. So if you are, I mean, reach out to your city councilwoman, if that's, or city council man. A lot of my mentors were men, how getting here. So you don't necessarily have to just go towards women either if you are a woman, and reach out to people. And I mean, send an email. Honestly, you'd be surprised. I get emails all the time from kids I talk to at colleges and stuff who just want to engage in stuff. Or I then say, well, this would be great for you to go volunteer here or there. Be around it. If you want to actually run for office, again, like I said, be around it, but also look into boards and commissions that you could do ahead of time. I actually didn't do any of that. I didn't do the boards and the commissions, but I was around it. I mean, I've been around government since I was 16. I just mm-hmm. worked in it, and I worked around the people. And you see, I think that's also really important, because when you do that, when you're around it, you see that elected officials are not perfect, like, at all. So when, you know, especially young women, we sometimes think we have to know everything before we do it, and that we have to have all of it together. And when you are around politicians, you realize really quickly they are anything but all together. So if you can see that and take away the perfectionism part of it, you could see yourself doing it a bit more as well. So, yeah, be around it, boards and commissions, email people, just reach out to people. And there's a lot of great Facebook groups now, too, that are trying to engage young people. And that's great. I mean, it is not hard, especially if you want to run for office, too. I mean, Google that. Google. I can't even tell you all of the groups right now that are out there trying to get young people involved in politics. There's a lot. Or if you care about education, there's groups you can be involved in that. Google. Use the internet. It's your friend.
And, it's such a concept, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Use and yeah. Reach out to me if you want ideas. It, regardless if you're Republican, Democrat, you know, a man, woman. Older, younger, whatever. I mean, there are places for you to be involved. And I think now more than ever, we do need people who care and want to be involved to actually, yeah, get engaged. So it's important.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I have two last questions for you. What is mm-hmm. one of your favorite books?
The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. I've read that when I was a page in the Iowa House back in 2007. Yeah. And it has stuck with me ever since. I will read it once in a while again. It's got some great advice, very simple advice, very simple agreements that you live by. And it has helped me a great deal. One of the agreements is not to take anything personally, so sometimes I have to work on that one. But it's a good reminder. Always do your best as part of it. And sometimes, by the way, your best is, well, for me after this election, my best was throwing on a sweatshirt and, you know, being like going to an event because I was really sad about the election the day before. Like, sometimes your best is not always 100% and always the same every single day. Like, you do your best at where you're at. And I think that has been really important to learn too, because it takes that pressure off you a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I'm going to have to look that up. I've never heard of it.
Yes, you will love it.
Yeah. Last thing is, if your life had a movie title to it, what would you name it? And it doesn't have to, it can be, you can make it up. Or it can already be one that's already out there.
Probably. So your husband's running. So it would be, so your husband's running, and a question mark, because that was one of the first questions I got asked when I was in a room of people after it was known that I was going to run for office. I had actually a woman come up to me and ask me, so your husband's running? And I was like, no, I'm not even dating anyone.
I'm single. I do not believe you've ever been married or engaged.
Yeah. So, which is, it's kind of an ironic title. So it highlights the sexism and crap that you are up against in this. And it's just kind of, it's funny. I mean, I did do this basically single and I didn't wait to have it all together to do it. And I think that's part of what makes the story interesting, is I just didn't wait. I didn't wait until I, you know, was married and had the picket fence and had it all together. I mean, you can do that, which is great. And that's wonderful. But I think it's really important to show that you don't have to do that either. If you know it and you're smart and you care about something, it's important to just go do it. And I think that's why that would be my title, mostly because it's funny too. So
yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, Abby, thank you so much for just taking time out of your day, as always, because I know you're super busy. And it's just always great to catch up with fellow Dubuquians.
Yes, Iowans. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, thank you so much for having me. This is awesome.
Yeah. Well, enjoy the rest of your week and time in DC, and then we'll keep in touch.
Thank you. Sounds good. Take care. Bye, Abby.
See you.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to the She Did It Her Way podcast. Did you like this episode? Head on over to iTunes.com to leave us a rating and a review. We would love to hear from you. And don't forget to check out SheDidItHerWayPodcast.com, where you can subscribe to our email list so you can receive the inside scoop on our latest episode released each Monday. Now, do us a favor and go make it a great week.